Okay. Before you click away, because you saw accounting in the title, guys, this week's episode is so amazing. We have Matt with CapForge, which is actually the accounting company that helps me with my bookkeeping each and every single week. And he breaks this down in such a fun and simple way. Oh my gosh, you guys, please keep on listening.
We are gathered here today to bring together the wedding community. Whether you are a seasoned pro, a newbie planning to start your own wedding business, or an engaged couple hoping to see behind the scenes, we're here to share tips, tricks, and laughs with you as we talk weddings. The Union Podcast is a show that aims to build a community for those in the wedding planning trenches. Join Jamie Wolfer, Heather Laurie Fear, and special guests in roundtable discussions about the challenges and joys of the wedding business. And now, here come your hosts, Jamie and Heather.
You guys, today we have a treat. We are talking accounting.
Woo!
And we brought a special guest, Matt from Jamie's CPA accounting firm.
Yeah.
Matt, welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Do you want to give yourself a formal introduction? Because it's a pretty special one that you actually have some pretty cool ties to the wedding industry.
Yeah, thanks. I've been doing this kind of CapForge accounting bookkeeping gig for about 20 years. So lots of work. All of our clients are small business owners. I've had lots of other businesses myself. So I've been a small business owner. I think of myself really more as an entrepreneur than as an accountant. I'm that kind of business person. I've started a lot of businesses and I tend to work at the top level of the business versus down in the real nitty gritty of the accounting world. But fun fact for you guys and your audience, for years in high school and then in college, in between semesters and whatnot, I worked at a wedding venue that had four different rooms. So on a really busy Saturday, we could have eight weddings going.
Oh my
gosh.
Four
in the afternoon, four in the evening. So I got, you know, thrown headfirst into the wedding industry and sort of the food service and wait staff side of it, and worked my way up from, you know, lowly kind of filler of the water glasses to, you know, room captain and things. So I got a pretty good intro there. And then years later, I ended up owning a catering business for 4 years, where about 25% of our business was weddings. We did a lot of corporate events and picnics and other stuff too, but we did a lot of weddings. So I don't have any idea how many weddings I've been to in my lifetime, you know, but probably 500, 600, 700, some big number like that. So aside from the accounting and small business side of things, I've got a lot of actual hands-on, been there, coordinated that wedding experience.
Which is so funny because we had no idea about that, Matt, before you came on. We were both like, wait, what?
It's not on my business card or anything, but it's there.
Well, it's very helpful for us and our audience today as we pick your brain about all things accounting. And I mentioned this beforehand, but I'll just remind our listeners so you know we're thinking about you, all you listeners out there. Our audience tends to be pretty new to the wedding industry. They're folks starting up their own businesses. So today, as we chat with you, please try to keep that in mind so our listeners can totally, you know, revel in your wisdom and know it is the perfect fit for them.
I will do that.
Awesome. Now, I think the best place to start is just at the beginning. So I guess if we have someone listening who is like, I am starting a new business right now. I am so bold and brave and 2020 has not scared me. I'm starting a business. Where should they start on the side of their books? Like, do they make an entity? Do they just go out and do it? Like, what happens?
So I am a big fan of keeping it simple until you need to make it more complicated. So when you're just starting out, yes, you could create an LLC or an S corp or something, but that all costs money. And if you change direction or decide, you know, to do things differently a little down the road, now you've got to spend more money to kind of take that all apart. So what I would suggest for anybody starting a business is just keep it super simple. If you are going to, you know, be a just yourself working from home, you really don't even necessarily need to go out and, you know, get a DBA set up. A DBA, a fictitious business name, you know, if you were going to be the Amazing Wedding Planner or something, that would be what you would register to be able to use that name and to be able to open a bank account using that name. You really could even start without doing any of that, just literally, you know, working with a client to provide your services as a contractor, as you, as an individual. But what I would say, the nice thing about having a DBA that you can do, and generally what you do is you go to your county recorder and you file your fictitious business name, and it costs, you know, about $50 on average, I would say. And then you can go to your bank, wherever you normally bank, you don't have to go to any special business bank, and open a separate bank account for the business. And so then when you start to get some money, you start to get your first payments from clients, put that money in that business account. And then if you have any business related expenses, if you have to buy something, take the money out of that business account. And what I'm getting at is try hard to, as much as you can, not kind of commingle your personal funds, your personal checking account, personal credit cards with your business. It's hard. I know when you're starting, you don't, you know, have that separation. But from an accounting perspective and making things easy when tax time comes around, the more you can keep it separated from the early days, the easier it is. So I'd say if you're just starting out, today's your first day, then consider getting a DBA so that you can then open a bank account for your business. And if you don't get a DBA, then just go to your bank and ask for a second checking account and just use that, even though it's in your personal name, just to help keep things separated. I'd say that would be kind of the first thing to do. But beyond that, don't go nuts. Don't go out and start a corporation or register an LLC or anything right off the bat. Give it some time, make some money first, get some clients before you kind of upgrade to that level.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I'm still using an old college checking account. Like, it's not even a formal business account. It will be as we're moving over because we are incorporating, we are establishing the LLC for my business, but like, it's still a Chase college checking account for us.
Yeah. You don't have to get fancy. You know, sometimes people feel like, oh, it's not a real business, or people won't take me seriously, or I have to do these special things, but really you don't. My thing is always, before anything else, go out and get some business, sign up a client, make some money, and then you can come back and, you know, start to figure out, do I need to get a little more organized, a little more formal? But sometimes people come to us and they've spent literally thousands of dollars getting this whole thing set up, and then they're like, okay, and now I'm going to go get a client, and then they find out they don't like it, or it's not a fit for them, or whatever, and you know, that's just money that was wasted. They could have spent that time going out and just doing it. Just go do it. That's the real key to success. Don't overthink it. Don't overplan it. Just go out and give it a shot.
Yeah, I feel like that whole process for some people can almost be a type of procrastination to avoid getting to that.
Yeah.
To that work, you know? It's like they don't want to dive in and see if it really works or if it's a good fit for them. So they're like, let me just look at all these books and come up with all the accounts I need to get and do all these forms. So it's like, skip that, just dive into it and see how it fits. See if you like it. And then if you're digging it and the business is coming in, get all fancy.
100%. I mean, true story here. My sister, who I love to death, she's not really an entrepreneur, but she thought at one point she wanted to start her own graphic design business. And no joke, she spent 9 months deciding on the name and a logo. 9 months. Mm-hmm. And I was like, seriously, this is not your thing. You're just putting this off because that's the kind of fun part, thinking of the name and, oh, maybe it'll be this and I do the logo for that. But you're not really in business yet. You're just kind of pretending. So if you're serious about business, go out and do some business. If you're, you know, giving yourself excuses to spend time doing other stuff that doesn't really help it get off the ground, then maybe you should take a step back and think about, you know, how serious are you really about doing it?
Yeah. Cause if it takes 9 months to make a logo, I mean, as a budding graphic designer,
right. Good luck.
You're going to have a real long process with all of your clients. You know what I mean?
Yes.
No, but you're right. It is that sense of procrastination. And that was something that for a long time, I mean, someone mentions accounting or books to me and I'm like, like I still to this day, which Matt, I just bless you and your company and your sweet people who help me out all the time. Cause this is the kind of stuff that's super super scary for some people. Like, I think I've honestly told my husband before, I'm like, I'm worried the IRS is just going to come knock on my door if I don't do this correctly. It's like, this stuff is scary, but people can kind of get bogged down in the weeds with it. So what are some potentially, like, do you recommend people using some software if they're not at a point where they can hire a company like yours? What do you recommend in that kind of situation where they want to take control, they're not using it to procrastinate, but they want to make sure that they're doing this correctly?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, I'm a big fan of keep it simple, right? You can do a very good job keeping track of things with a very simple Excel sheet or use Google Sheets if you don't have Office or whatever. And literally just three columns. Column one is the date. Column two is the amount that you spent. And column three is a couple of words about what it was for. So your first entry might be $50 on, you know, November 5th and register DBA. And then $25 for on November 6th for Vistaprint for business cards and whatever. And just kind of go through and keep a list of the different things that happen in the business in that very simple three column format. And then, you know, if you do nothing else at the end of the year, you can go back and kind of quickly categorize, okay, these are the ones that were advertising related. These are the ones that were office supplies, whatever. And then here's my deposits altogether. I got, you know, $20,000 from clients for various services. And you've got yourself a simple little setup of accounting that you can use then to file your taxes or give to your CPA that'll work. In a pinch, it's not amazing. It's not full-blown accounting. But, you know, for what you're just starting with, it's enough. And it's very simple to understand and very easy to use. And you don't have to be a math wizard to kind of understand what's happening there. But it'll work for the time being. And then again, when you start to get more complicated and you've got more things going on and you maybe are ready to hire an employee, then, you know, okay, at that point, we should probably talk about stepping up the game a little bit. But for starters, a simple spreadsheet like that is all you need. And you could quickly scan down and see, okay, here's how much came in this month. Here's how much went out this month. I'm doing good, or I'm okay, or I'm a little behind my goals or whatever. But that's really all you need to get started. And literally anyone can do that. Even if you kind of gave up on math in elementary school, anybody can do that kind of thing, and you won't be overwhelmed by it.
All right. Now, you mentioned getting an employee. So I guess, is that the step where you see that it's time to restructure and rethink how your business is set up? Or is it a income level, or what sort of thing in your mind would trigger restructuring and reorganizing things for a company?
So where we usually talk to clients about maybe getting a little more formal with what they're doing is when their net income, so the amount you get to keep after your expenses, gets to somewhere between $25,000, $30,000, $35,000. If you're, you know, you're really doing it kind of as a side hustle, or you just started, you're only a couple of months in, and after all your expenses, you've only made $10,000 or $15,000, you know, that you're still pretty small potatoes in terms of the IRS and your filing requirements. Once you get to be kind of that 25,000 and up number, though, there starts to be some definite advantages to being a little more sophisticated. You get some tax savings you can take advantage of potentially. And the other thing is, when you start to get to that size or bigger, now there's a little more liability potentially attached to what you're doing. And there's some protection that you can get from being an LLC or an S corp possibly. So some tax savings and some liability protection. Now, like I mentioned, if you set up an entity like that, it comes with some costs too. There's the cost to set it up, the cost to maintain it, the cost of, you know, the additional tax return filing, or you know, having to use a tax preparer versus being able to do it yourself. So you don't want to do it too soon because you're going to have more costs than it makes sense to offset with what you're making. But once you get to that kind of level of income, now it starts to make more and more sense. And the higher you get, the more you can save. If you're going to make $100,000 this year in your business, you know, you definitely want to be set up as an LLC or an S corp, because the tax savings is going to save you $5,000, $7,500 or more versus just staying as that sole prop with that single, you know, college checking account that you had. So
rude.
I mean, just as an example,
I mean,
not,
this pulling it out of a hat, you know?
So that's kind of the point where, okay, this is a serious business. You're making decent money. It's time to, you know, take a step up and do things a little bit more sophisticated.
Yeah. I mean, and all joking aside, like there is a reason we are now switching away from that because we are at that bracket where we're like, okay, it's time to start taking this a little bit more seriously. And for me as a business owner, I don't want to touch it anymore. Like I want to make sure that I'm focused on the things that I am good at. And all of us wear so many hats when we first get started in our businesses. Like you just have to. You have to be your own accountant. You have to be your own salesperson. You have to be your own social media person. When you get started, you have to do so many different things. But as you grow and as your income does as well, you know, you have the option or the luxury of really kind of transferring some of that over onto somebody else. With that in mind, what are some of the big mistakes you see new entrepreneurs making with their bookkeeping?
Well, I mean, the mistake we see really is just people holding on to it too long because, you know, you don't have time, to your point exactly, right? You don't have time to go and take enough classes and have enough practice to learn how to really do the bookkeeping right. So chances are, you know, you're taking a lot longer to do it than if I was to do it or one of my staff was to do it who's trained for this and does this all day long. And then you're also much more likely to be making mistakes that are going to cost you money, either by overlooking expenses that you could have been writing off or undercounting income or getting yourself in trouble by the way you're reporting things to the IRS. And that's going to come back and bite you in terms of penalties and interest and things like that. So, and then the other part of it is, right, if you spend time each month doing your own sort of in the weeds bookkeeping stuff every month, going through, spending time reconciling and pulling all your paper together and trying to figure out how to do everything. If you took that time instead and put it towards marketing or having some client meetings and actually signing up a client, right? What's one client worth to you versus the time that you're spending doing the bookkeeping? If I can do your books for you for a couple $100 or less, and then you could take that time and sign up a client who pays you $5,000 or $7,500 or whatever it is for their whole process, right? You made a great trade-off in spending your time doing what you can do that you can outsource and outsourcing the stuff that you can outsource to somebody like me that can do it for you correctly, quickly, and not take up your time on that. So the mistake I see entrepreneurs doing is either avoiding it altogether because they don't want to deal with it because they don't know how to do it and it seems yucky, or doing it themselves and trying to hold on to it and thinking, well, I'm saving the, you know, $100 I'd pay Matt every month, but not realizing they're costing themselves $5,000 because they're not doing it right, or they're making some mistake, or they didn't do the S election that they should have, or whatever it is. And in the end, you know, they lost out anyways.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's really important for folks to be getting help on their books when their hourly rate, their effective hourly rate, is really more than the cost that they'd be paying to have someone else do it.
Exactly right. If you've got all the time in the world, you know, great, you know, take the time and do the best you can with it. And you may still want to get a year-end review or at least have your CPA look it over before they take it. But, you know, once you get to the point where you're getting pretty busy and you could be out on client meetings and you find yourself not doing client meetings because you're doing bookkeeping, that should be an immediate red flag to you that, hey, I'm not spending my time wisely. I'm costing myself by not being out and doing what I can do best that I can't have someone else do.
Now, I had a question following up on what we had said earlier. Structuring things, not getting too complicated. Now, there are also these different systems out there of bookkeeping, and there's like accrual versus cash as like a simple little detail of your books, but also like I've read a lot about profit first, and I feel like it's a little daunting to look at. And so maybe it's something people shouldn't be considering early on, but what are your thoughts on that? And when do you think it's time to kind of approach your books with more of a system?
I don't even know what any of that means. You just said all that and I was like, oh dear heavens.
Oh, what? Words. I don't know what those are. So yeah, I mean, I think As you get bigger and more sophisticated and you go beyond sort of just, I just want to make sure I get enough business in this month to cover my bills and have a little to keep. And you get more into this phase of, okay, I've been doing this long enough. I feel comfortable enough that the business, I'm no longer worried about, is the business going to make it? Now I'm in the phase of, I know the business is going to make it. Where do I go from here? How much do I want to grow? You know, can I do, am I able yet to hire an assistant, or am I yet able to, you know, maybe I get into start being able to do some of the rentals myself, and, or, you know, whatever it is. That's when you start to say, okay, I no longer can get away with kind of the Excel table with three columns. I need to get into a little more sophisticated setup because my business is bigger and probably mistakes will cost more. But also I want to be able to use these numbers, not just to pay taxes at the end of the year, but actually to make decisions about how to run the business, how to run it better, where I can go with it. So that's kind of one place where you can say, okay, I'm probably outgrown the Excel sheet. It's probably time to look at something like QuickBooks. And then, you know, talk to somebody like me and say, you know, for my business, would accrual make sense, or cash? Or if you don't know those terms, I can look at your books and say, hey, you're kind of doing it this basic way, but if you do this little more complicated way, or we do it for you, it'll give you better information that you can use to actually manage your business better than what you've currently got, which, you know, most people, when they start out, they're literally just, they look at the bank balance. And if they've got some money, they're like, woohoo. And if it's low, they're like, oh no. And that's as far as their management goes of the business. It's really just the yay or nay. And profit first, just to circle back to that point, that's really just a system that helps people who are sort of disorganized or don't have a good handle on this. It's I don't want to call it a crutch, but it's basically just a system to sort of put some money in different buckets instead of just one bank account. It gives you a bunch of different bank accounts, and you say, okay, I'll put some in here for my operating costs, and some in here that's going to be mine to keep, and then some in here for tax time. And that way I won't get to April 15th and go, oh my God, I have this tax bill because I made money, but I didn't save any of it, and now I have nothing to pay it with.
Right. Yeah, I've done that before. It's not right. A good feeling.
It's not bad. A good feeling. It's it's something a lot of new business owners kind of get caught by because they're so busy. They're still in that survival mode. They're spending to grow and spending to, you know, build the business, and then also trying to take some to pay personal stuff. And then they just don't think about, because they've always just had those taxes withheld from their paycheck, they don't think about, that's not happening anymore and I need to set aside some money to save. So Profit First, to some extent, is trying to help you with that. Honestly, if you're organized and you have a good bookkeeping system, you really don't need that extra crutch. But if you're not organized, or you're just the kind of person that really likes to put stuff in buckets to be able to visually have a good handle on it, then, you know, it works fine.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a good experience with something similar, but I wasn't using that exact system. But I found it to be helpful exactly for that reason of the tax bill at the end of the year. And now we have our CPA working with us where we do quarterly installment payments. But before we had that set up, it was very scary. Like, tax season would approach and I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so afraid. I don't want to see what this bill is. And then when you actually get the system in place and have a CPA who's helped you, you know, come up with the estimates and be able to pay them ahead, it's such a relief. You guys, that was a happy point for me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's the whole goal of having a good, you know, bookkeeping system, is it's not like a surprise where you pick a number out of a hat on April 10th and you have no idea what's coming. You know all the way along, okay, this is how the business is doing. This is how much profit I'm keeping. About 20% or whatever your number is going to be what I'm going to owe in taxes. So way before even the end of the year, you have a pretty good handle on what that'll look like. And then of course you know, do what you can to try and reduce that number. And again, the bigger the business, you know, the more things you do as you get bigger, you can have your own 401k, or you can, you know, if you need to buy a car for the business can buy the car for you and write that off, or you can pay for your own health insurance if you're an S corp. And there's all these, you know, different things you can do to help yourself reduce that number. But if you don't have any planning and you don't have any idea what that number is, then yeah, it just comes as this really rude surprise in April going, well, what do you mean? That's what? I can't do that. And that's a really uncomfortable feeling that most people don't like to do more than once in their life.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it's a lesson you learn the one time. Ideally, in most situations, you're like, yeah, I'm not doing that again, because that's scary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of it for me when that happened, it was the jarring adjustment from being an employee, as you mentioned, and having money pulled out every pay period that I wasn't even thinking about, that I'm paying taxes, to suddenly I'm in charge of that tax liability and managing it myself, which I wasn't ready for or aware I was doing. And then that was a surprise. But additionally, the fact that when you're self-employed, aren't you getting taxed on all the income versus when you've actually gotten to the point that you're set up as a business structure, it's more on the revenue. And so that's where those deductions come in and all of that, right?
Right. So there's a couple of things happening. When you're self-employed, you're having to pay both halves of the most of what you're paying is Social Security and Medicare. So when you're an employee, right, and you get a paycheck, and let's say you're supposed to get $1,000 for your pay period, and then the check comes and it's only $817 or whatever, right? So some of what got held out was your obligation for Social Security and Medicare, and then some of what got held out was what you would owe in April 15, and then if you've overpaid, you get a refund as an employee. What you don't see as an employee is that your employer is also contributing for Social Security and Medicare and some state taxes on your behalf. So when you become self-employed, now you're responsible for not only the part you would have paid anyway as an employee, but also the part that your employer would have paid. So those pieces together, generally, you know, as a rule of thumb, we use 15%. So for each dollar you make, 15 cents is automatically going to be carved off for your Social Security, Medicare, state tax payments. And then on top of that, of course, now you're also paying income tax on everything you make. So, you know, when you make $10,000 for the year, we're not talking about a lot of money, and there's other deductions and things that help you not pay much in taxes when you're not making much. But as your business grows, and now if you're making $50,000 or $100,000, those bites start to really hurt. So that's why people at that point, or even before, like I said, $25,000, $30,000 for the year, it really makes a lot of sense to switch your business into a business entity where you've got more options for deductions and you can get out of paying some of that self-employment tax, and you can write off things that you can as a regular business owner as a sole prop. So that's some of those tax savings. And that's where I say, like, people who, you know, say, oh, no, I can do this, I can figure it all out myself, but then they don't use the strategies that could have saved them $5,000, $10,000 on what they made because they just don't know, which isn't their fault, but they're not an accountant. So, you know, they feel like they're saving themselves paying a professional, but they're really costing themselves thousands of dollars because they just didn't know what they didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And I honestly was surprised by how affordable it is to have someone to help manage with books, because for a long time, I didn't even want to do that because I was worried it was going to cost so much money. I was like, I can't afford $700 a month to have someone look at my books. I don't even have $700 a month, or whatever it was. But I was surprised, like, when we reached that point and then started working with you guys, I was like, oh, this is so much more manageable than I thought. It's so much less scary than I thought. And now I am less concerned about the IRS knocking on my door.
Right. I mean, you get to sleep well at night. You get to use, you get financial reports every month that can help you run your business. And it really, you know, if there's not a lot going on in the business, it really shouldn't cost a lot. I mean, you can certainly find those people that will charge you an arm and a leg, but it definitely doesn't have to be like that. And, you know, we've kind of set our business up around, you know, like I said, we work with all small business owners. I know, you know, none of them are rolling in money and just want, oh yeah, whatever price you want to charge, no problem. Everybody's budget conscious. Everybody's looking for a good value. So we, you know, try hard to provide that, and we're sort of set up to, you know, make it as easy as possible at an affordable rate for people to get good results. And it's worked well for us. And it really doesn't have to be scary or expensive to get this done right.
No. Yeah. I found it to be relatively painless. So thanks for that.
Good.
Now, I had a question for you, Matt, and this is specific, I think, just to California. I don't know if this is an issue other places. There have been some changes in how you can pay people as contractors, right? And the rules on being a contractor here in California have gotten a bit tighter, which I think directly we'll see some impacts on the wedding industry, because so many of the vendors maybe they don't hire full-time employees and they just have folks who fill in here and there and pay them as contractors. What is your prediction on how that's going to go and what should vendors be thinking at this time?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, you know, they changed the laws to try and capture people like Uber and Lyft and these really, you know, and DoorDash guys who are these big companies who they felt like the lawmakers felt like weren't treating their people fairly. And by having them be contractors, you know, they were getting kind of a raw deal. They didn't get time off. They didn't get benefits and things like that. You know, of course, you can argue that the people driving Lyft and Uber and whatever, they were okay with that. They wanted to be able to be flexible and whatever. So that aside, the law was written in a way that kind of impacted a lot more people than just the ones they were intending to. And mm-hmm. So you're right. It definitely has gotten more difficult for people to qualify as an independent contractor when you hire them. And the general things to kind of keep in mind, whether or not somebody qualifies as a 1099 or not, meaning you can pay them just for the job they're doing. You're not putting them on payroll. You're not withholding Social Security and Medicare for them. You're not issuing them a W-2 at the end of the year. You're just, you know, if they come and do a $500 job for you, you cut them a check for $500 and that's the end of it. So if you're going to pay somebody like that, what you should keep in mind is, one is that they should be not just working for you. They should be working for lots of other people as well. So if you're their sole source of income, then chances are you should, you know, be treating them as an employee. They should also be carrying their own insurance versus not having insurance or relying on your insurance. You also should not be dictating their schedule and availability. You should not be providing them, you know, a uniform that has your name on it. They should be using their own equipment and transportation, not driving your car and using your equipment, working in your space. It's sort of the, you know, the common sense test to some standpoint. You know, if this person just works for you, they do whatever you tell them to do, and, you know, they do it all for your business with your stuff, then, you know, fair enough, they're probably an employee. If they work for a lot of different people and they only work for you when they want to work for you, and they don't, you know, they've got their own business name and their own company name and their own insurance, then, you know, probably it's fine to treat them and pay them as a 1099 and not have them be your employee. And if, you know, there's definitely places that get into a gray area, it's a little harder to tell. And I would say, you know, when you're small, again, you're much less likely to be caught. Or, and that's probably not the right way to say it. You're not likely to run into problems when you're small because you're just dealing with small numbers, and it's not worth the government's time to go after you. But if you get to the point where you've got five or six people who are full time working for you, and you've got a $500,000 a year business, and yet you're treating all these people as 1099s and not withholding taxes, and you're not covering them with workers' comp. Now, if they catch you, you know, that could be $100,000 or more in back taxes and workers' comp and fines and everything else. So now it's kind of, you're big enough for them to consider you a target. So along with everything else I've said, you know, when you start small, don't spend a lot of time sweating that you've got to have everybody on payroll and you've got to do all these things to jump through legal hoops. But the bigger you get, the more you have to lose and the more the consequences are going to be painful if you do, you know, go awry. So the bigger you get, the more you want to kind of pay attention to that and make sure that you're staying on the right side of things.
Yeah. All right. On the up and up. That makes sense.
Yeah. That I feel like that was the best explanation. It's almost like it felt so convoluted when it came out in California that I know for me, I was like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? But clearly I have like this very obscene fear of being attacked by the IRS. So I'm constantly trying to make sure that I'm, you know, like I don't even want to touch things that could get me in trouble. So when this whole thing came out, I was really concerned. But Matt, your description of just like the common sense thing. I mean, if they're working 40 hours a week for you, wearing your logo, like this, that's an employee. Like that's not an independent contractor.
Right. I mean, you kind of have to think if, you know, if I was called into an office to explain or, you know, justify myself, why am I paying this person as a 1099? And they just kind of go through the list. And if during that whole time, you could just imagine yourself kind of squirming and looking at the door and going, I don't have any way to really justify. Well, then you probably were doing it wrong.
Yeah.
But if you could say, look, no, they work for 15 other people and I've only used them 3 times this year and I've only paid them a total of $1,200 for the whole year. And, you know, they've got their own car and their own insurance and I pay their company name. I don't even pay them individually. Then, yeah, I mean, that's fine. They're an independent contractor. So, you know, use that test first and foremost. And then if you're still kind of, I'm just not sure, you know, shoot me an email. That's fine. I'm happy to chat with you and say, oh yeah, that one probably is a 1099 or that one probably does need to be an employee. But most of the time, if you just stop and think about it reasonably, the answer, you know, is pretty clear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the big question I know on everyone's mind. How do you get a Cayman Island bank account to hide all your money?
Well.
Wow. That's another podcast episode.
I don't know if we want to do that on a recorded line, but I'm happy to tell you offline.
Well, after this recording, we'll talk, Matt, because I just, you know, we're very hopeful that things are going to be popping once 2020 rounds out. And
oh,
we're
going
to
yeah.
have so much money to stash. So, you know, got to go international.
Okay, I actually do have a question, though. Talk to me about the receipt thing. Do we have to keep each and every single receipt? And this is just like, how often does it help us?
Yes. So the easy answer is generally no, right? The IRS has said, if it's, you've got a bank statement, like you used your debit card for something, or you paid with a check and you've got it through your bank statement, or you used a credit card and you've got the credit card statement and on the credit card is a memo for whatever it was, they will accept that in lieu of a receipt, right? So you don't need to keep all those little tiny pieces of paper or even use one of those apps to take pictures of it and save all of them everywhere. And this is also another one of those things where it's kind of common sense, right? Nobody really would think that you as an individual for your own personal use is going to spend, you know, $50,000 on flowers, right? No, like it's just not going to happen. So they're not going to question payments that you made to your vendors for flowers or chair rental or, you know, DJ bookings or whatever, you know, whatever you're doing for your clients. Nobody's going to look at that and say, well, oh, that was probably for personal use. Where they do sometimes have questions, and the only receipts it's sometimes worth keeping if you're kind of want to be on the extra careful side is if you're writing off meals. So you're, you know, maybe you go out to lunch with a client or a prospective client to discuss things and you want to use, you know, write that meal off as a business expense, which you legitimately can if you're meeting with a client to talk about business or a prospective client to see if you can sign them up. Those things are a little harder for the IRS to tell. Did you really go out to lunch just because you felt like going out to lunch, or was this a client meeting? So on those receipts, the meals receipts, if you write a little note on the receipt, you keep the receipt and say, you know, meeting with Jenny to discuss, you know, bridesmaids' dresses or whatever, then you've got a little bit more ammunition if they were to come and say, look, we don't think you really spent $5,000 this year on meals for the business. We think some of that was just you eating out. So those receipts, if you want to save any of your receipts, those in particular are the ones that are more open to question. Or if you are doing something that, again, you know, could be interpreted or could potentially be personal, right? If you're flying to Hawaii for a week with your family and you want to write that off as a business trip, then it would be great to have receipts that say, you know, here's the taxi I took to check out this wedding venue, or here's the receipt from, you know, this booking that I did or whatever, that or conference I attended, you know, Wedding Planners of America's convention in Hawaii, something that says, hey, this legitimately was a business trip. Because otherwise, just writing off a trip to Hawaii with your family with no evidence behind it, that's a little bit more likely to draw some scrutiny. If they're going to scrutinize anything, it's going to be that. But they're not going to look hard at you spending money on linens or vases or, you know, whatever it is that's clearly this is for the business, and it's not likely you're stashing this stuff at home and trying to write it off as a business expense. So generally speaking, no, if you don't keep receipts, that's fine. If you're using a business card or a business bank account, or you know, even if it's a personal card, you can show the statement as proof of receipt. The only receipts you might want to pay a little extra attention to are the ones specifically meals, specifically travel, that you know may be more of a gray area if you don't have any kind of reasonable explanation as to why you're wanting to write those off.
I had two follow-up questions. One, you did not mention cash, and in my experience, cash is not good for your business accounting. So can you talk about that, please? And mileage, my other questions about how should we log mileage and how detailed do we need to be?
So for cash, if you get paid in cash, you are supposed to take it to the bank and deposit it. And then with the bank deposit, it becomes now a record of your business income. If on the way to the bank, you take some of that cash and use it for a business expense, then if you were working with a company like us, you would want to say, well, okay, I got a $5,000 deposit, and on the way to the bank, I took $2,500 of it and put it down at a venue, and then I deposited the other $2,500 in the bank, and so then we'd record it $5,000 of income and then less $2,500 for the venue. On the other hand, if you get paid a $5,000 deposit and you only end up putting $2,500 in the bank and nobody ever sees the rest of it, well, yeah, that's just what happened. I don't know. I'm not the IRS. I don't know. Yes. I don't know your life. So you guys, whatever happened to it, that's what I don't know. So, but generally speaking, yes, cash is not a great way to do business just because the record keeping becomes more complicated and you have to take an extra step to kind of, you know, make that deposit and make note of what that deposit was for and so on versus getting a check or taking a payment through a credit card or PayPal or something where there's an immediate electronic record of it. So, you know, cash for record keeping is not great. Cash, if you're not keeping the record of it, then, you know, oh well.
Could be great. not legal, but great.
Well, frowned on. Yeah, they like you to really report everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's up to the individual. And I would say, you know, when you're just starting out and somebody gives you a cash deposit, if everything makes it to the bank, okay, great. If it doesn't, whatever. But, you know, when you get to be a significant business and you've got employees and you've got people running around, the problem with cash, and then probably not so much in this industry because it's just not a big cash industry, but just as a side note, I guess, right? When an employee or employees see you as the owner get handed cash and then they see you squirrel it away and not take care of it properly and not record it and not, you're demonstrating to them that you're not doing things correctly, you're not following the rules and you're not tracking it, then if they happen to be at an event and were handed cash, then they may have the same idea. So it's just better to be, you know, when you're just you, okay, you do what you want. But as you get bigger, it's better to have procedures and have tracking and have rules so that no one else is sort of encouraged to follow the example set by the owner and, you know, squirrel some of it away, not report everything or play games.
Yeah, that's a smart way of looking at it.
So, sorry, there was a second follow-up question besides cash, which I've...
Sorry, I was pummeling you with questions.
She's just so good.
I just had so many questions. Mileage, because that's the other thing that's a huge write-off. And I know it can sometimes be problematic because you really got to separate the personal driving from the professional driving. And then if you're driving to your office and back, if you had an office, then that wouldn't necessarily be a write-off. Am I understanding that correctly? Help.
Yes. So, some people like to do mileage and they're, you know, you want to be careful about it because only some trips count. Driving to the office doesn't count, but from the office to a venue or from the venue to a client meeting or a client meeting back to the office, those things do count. And you can use an app to track mileage. The thing with mileage is it's whether or not it's the best way to do it depends a lot on where you live. If you live in a low cost state, where gas is relatively inexpensive, car insurance is pretty expensive, mileage may actually be good because the mileage rate is set on a federal level. So it's the whole US, they look at all the costs of running a car and then they take an average. So if you're in a low cost state, using the mileage may actually benefit you. On the other hand, if you're an expensive state like California or New York or something where gas tends to be more, insurance is more, then using the federal mileage rate may actually kind of understate what it costs you to use your car. So for those states and for most clients, generally we find you get a better result by having the business pay for all of your gas, all of your insurance, all of your maintenance for the car. And then at the end of the year, let's say, you know, we add that all together and you spent $4,000 on gas and maintenance and DMV fees and everything, insurance for your car. And then we just say, okay, so how much, you know, do you think was business use versus personal? And you say, well, probably 50% was personal, 50% business. All right. So then out of 4,000, we'll take 2,000 and use that on the tax return as the write-off. And a lot of times, not only is that much easier to keep track of because you don't have to remember to turn the app on and off every time you get in the car, but also you come out better than if you track the miles and you said, okay, it turned out to be, you know, 2,000 miles and at 55 cents a mile, that's only whatever. And it's not as much. So for ease of tracking and generally a better result for most people, we recommend that you just have the business pay for, use your business credit card, your business debit card every time you fill up for gas, when you pay your car insurance, and when you pay for repairs or maintenance and stuff like that.
Smart.
Okay. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, it really goes back to that, what you've been saying the whole time, just keep it simple. Like, just keep it simple until it has to be more complicated, fine. But like, in the meantime, let's keep it as streamlined as we can.
Definitely. I mean, the business itself will throw you so many curveballs on its own that you don't need to add any complexity to the situation. And I mean, especially just, and again, saying this from personal experience, right? One of the things I had to always keep reminding myself, right, in working with this is, to me, it's like, okay, it's the 2 p.m. Smith wedding, but I also have the 1:30 Jones wedding and the 2:30, you know, Abel wedding and the Johnson wedding. And then I got four weddings tonight. And for Smith, Jenny Smith or whoever it is, right? That's a once in a lifetime event. She's going to remember that for her whole rest of her life. So like, that's really important. And you got to stay focused on remembering that even though to you, it's a job, one job of eight jobs that you have that day, to them, it's a huge deal. And you don't want to be distracted by other stupid stuff like, oh, I still got to do the bookkeeping. Yeah. Like, you want to be able to focus on that client for that experience, for that time, because you are really going to be part of making or breaking a lifetime memory for somebody. And when they come to you or the bride's mom comes to you and goes, these napkins aren't white. And you're like, it says white on the package. And she's like, I know what white is and this isn't white. And you're like, oh my God, I don't have any other napkins. And they're just napkins. You don't want to lose your S, right, on that, because like that, you got to stay focused on fixing those problems and not going back and worrying about making more problems for yourself because you've got this super complicated mileage tracking app that you got to figure out how to use.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I have the QuickBooks Self-Employed that I allow to track for me, and then I can decide if something is like, so it just stays on running in the background whenever I'm driving.
Right.
So I can like manually say this was for business, this was for personal, those kinds of things. So that I found to be super helpful in that area, but I wouldn't touch it if I didn't have that app, because I feel like that'd be so complicated.
Yeah, definitely. And with that, you know, you may find that it does a pretty good job, but also if you were just paying for, you know, having the business pay for everything and then deducting a certain percentage for personal, you know, you might come up with a couple thousand more dollars and deductions that you wouldn't have gotten the other way. So
see, and this is why I have you helping me with my books. Right. And therein lies why I come to you for this kind of stuff, because I don't know. And a lot of us don't. And that's the thing, is like, we're not supposed to. We're not supposed to be experts at this field. You know, for the same reason that me as a wedding planner, I would not know what to do with a camera for a wedding photographer. I just wouldn't. Like, I'm not supposed to be an expert in that field. We are going to wear a lot of hats early on in our businesses, and that's okay. Matt, I just love your methodology of just like, keep it simple. Just keep it as simple as you can and really focus on what your gifts are here. there's no need to overcomplicate it too soon or really dive in too hard, because it's going to get harder enough as is just running your own business. Cause you're so, that's so true.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the simpler you keep it and the less overwhelming in your mind of what you have to do and what's involved, the more likely you are to actually go out and do it, right? Because if you start thinking about all this stuff, oh my God, I got to keep books, I got to track mileage, I got to do this, I got to do that, I got to register a DBA. You're like, oh, I don't even forget all that. I'm just going to go back to whatever my job was and not even do this thing because it just seems so overwhelming. But it really doesn't have to be. Just keep it simple, break it down to sort of just the things that really matter. You know, who are your clients going to be, talking to those clients, getting the first couple clients signed up, you know, and these other details you can keep simple. You can work out sort of after the fact as you go. You don't want to ignore them and not do anything about it for the whole year, but it doesn't have to all be figured out on day one or all figured out before you start, right? You don't have to spend 9 months designing your logo. Just keep it simple, go out, start the business, and then these things, you'll have plenty of time to, you know, pick them up, figure them out as you go along.
Matt.
Oh, Matt. This is so good.
I did not think we'd go for an hour. I'm going to be totally honest with you. I was like, man, but then you just get talking about it, Matt, and you are infectious and you've made this feel so much easier, I'm sure, for so many of our listeners, because this is a stressful topic.
It is. Well, and I'm happy to help. And I love talking about it. And I know, you know, it's, I wish we could call it something else, because people see the title sometimes. They go, oh, you know, talk about accounting. Like, oh, well, yeah. If I have trouble sleeping, I guess I'll put that one on. But it doesn't have to be all boring and all technical and all like overwhelming. And like, at the end of the day, right, you're doing this for lots of reasons. You want to be your own boss. You want to make a difference in people's lives. You want to do something you love, but also you want to get paid. And with the accounting, that's how you figure out how much am I actually making for all my hard work? And is there a way I can make a little bit more and keep a little bit more? Cause I'm working really hard and I, you know, want this to be financially worth it in addition to the other ways that it's worth it. And without the accounting and bookkeeping piece, you really could miss out on a lot of that just for lack of, again, knowing how to do it right, the tricks of the trade. So, you know, don't put all the hard work in for free if there's a way to do it and love it and also make some pretty good money at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, this has been so great. And now I can go clear out my purse. So thank you for saying that about the receipts. Because again, the IRS is going to get me. And if I don't have every single receipt, I'm in trouble. So that's, I have a lot of purging to go do now.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt. I think you really did de-stress both of us and also hopefully our listeners so that they can feel confident moving ahead, getting their business rolling and actually focusing on the business and not all this stuff.
Oh, awesome. Well, I'm glad I could help if I did. And, I certainly enjoy chatting about this stuff. If, you know, listeners are out there that, you know, need some help or have questions, I'm happy to, you know, do what I can to help. And if you've gotten to the point where the business is big enough that you, you know, need some help with the bookkeeping and stuff, yeah, I'm happy to chat about that. And I'm sure we could put something together, some kind of a special deal for your listeners that would help them out even a little bit more.
Ooh, so, fancy.
Yeah, we can do something like that. We'll put together a special link or something you can put in the show notes or wherever that, give them a little spiff for getting this far, listening to me this long. That's definitely worth a reward right there.
Hey. You did it.
You made it.
We're so proud of you and we're so thankful for Matt. So you guys get your stuff in line, get it dialed in, and that way you can just focus on doing the fun business you enjoy. And thanks for listening. We are so glad you guys are here.
No, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
You've just walked down the aisle of today's episode of the Union Podcast. Thank you for celebrating today's show with us. We hope that you found a little gem of wedding wisdom from this episode. Please let us know your feedback by sharing a screenshot of this episode on Instagram. Be sure to tag @UnionPodcast so we can hear your voices. Let us know what topics you'd love to hear about on future episodes. And don't forget to subscribe to the show on whatever podcast platform you prefer. Until next time, stay lovely, wedding friends.
Oh, Matt, I can't say this enough. Like, seriously, infectious. This was great. I didn't know what to expect coming into this. And obviously, I love your company. And you guys have been really, really great for me and for my process. And I'm just so excited for the value that you've brought for our listeners today. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, no, I like I said, I look forward to this stuff. To me, this is fun, you know, having conversations, talking about things that, you know I can help with, and, you know, being able to provide some value for people who, because I know, I mean, I remember when I started, I was nervous. I had all these questions. What's going to happen? How do I do all this stuff? Oh my God, this is overwhelming. So it's nice to be able to kind of circle back to the beginning and talk to people and tell them, hey, it's not as bad as you think. It's not as scary as you think. And, you know, just focus on the basics and get out there and start the business, and the rest of it will fall into place. So to me, this is a lot of fun.